Muddy was an obvious allegory there. He got to sing the song.
We have to leave it there. But I want to thank you for being with us. David King Dunaway has made three major documentaries about Pete Seeger, historian and radio host. This is Democracy Now. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Step through the global window, alternating Thursday evenings for a trip around the world through the FM ethers of WUSB 90.1 FM. I'm Chris, and I'll be your host on the Global Rhythms program every other Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Tune in and expand your musical horizons on Global Rhythms on WUSB Stony Brook.
You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. The time is 6 o'clock p.m. It's time for Off the Wall. Thank you. All right. All right, coming in loud and clear. Yes, this, my friends, this is Off the Wall with Emmanuel.
Hang on, okay. I'm coming in loud and clear as well.
And I'm Kyle.
So you are. And you mentioned that I'm Emmanuel, so we got that out of the way. The question, listeners, is who are you? Well, I just thought I'd ask. I'd like to know.
That's an interesting thought you've had there.
Thank you. Well, hopefully we'll get an answer to it when we open up the phones later. Yes, folks, we are opening up the phones. And this time we'll put them back together after we play around with them a little bit. This is Off the Wall. We are here on this 22nd day of December. Do you know winter begins tonight, I believe?
Yeah, yesterday was kind of a long day, you know?
Uh-huh. Was it a long day or a long night?
It was the longest day.
No, it's the shortest day. Today's the shortest day. Today was the shortest day. It's now night. What's confusing about this? It's now nighttime. This will be the longest night. And I think this was the shortest day. Tomorrow will be another short day, but I don't think it'll be quite as short.
Right, but what if I'm nocturnal?
Then it'll be a long night that you're up for.
Or my day. Yeah. Okay, great. I'm glad we cleared that up.
Yeah. That's winter, but that's the only sign of winter that we have here at this particular point on Earth. It's not really funny anymore. I mean, what's going on with temperatures in the 60s? Even this, it hit 70 Fahrenheit at one point.
It's El Nino.
Okay. And I think that's interesting that you say that, because all the people, the scientific people that I know, are saying to me, this is not because of global warming. And just think about that for a second. If all the scientists, as the right-wingers like to say, are part of some conspiracy and have all kinds of agendas, wouldn't this be the perfect opportunity for them to say, oh, look at what global warming is doing, like that idiot with the snowball on the floor of Congress, saying this is proof that there is no global warming because it's snowing outside? No, it's easy to make these points, but it's not scientifically true. So, yeah, it's warm, but it's not because of global warming. What happens over the next few centuries is because of global warming.
Yeah, there's probably some incremental global warming going on in the background. That, I think, is clear that that's not stopping. But this is sort of, this is El Nino on top of that.
Uh-huh.
I think that's the best way to describe it. Anyway, so moving on.
For some reason, El Nino makes things warmer here in this part of the world. I don't really know why, but that's just the way it goes. Hopefully winter will actually come. You know, I admit last winter was the best winter ever, so I'm willing to pay for that with a warm winter this year. But I would like some, casual acknowledgement that this is in fact winter, so that we can tell the difference between the other parts of the year. This is not Florida, you know. We should have a distinct difference, and it's getting a little annoying.
Well, yeah, it was really extreme last year, so I guess this is the other end of that extreme, right? Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. I mean, I guess that's safe to say.
No, I don't think so, because winter should be cold. Winter should be snowy. I don't think that's an extreme. I think that's the norm. You know, if it was ridiculously cold and never rose above freezing for an entire 3-month period, then okay, that would be extreme, maybe.
Well, there's still January and February, and they're close enough to winter.
Well, fingers crossed on that. So, what's going on? What have you been up to?
Gosh, yeah. What have I been up to? What haven't I been up to?
Okay, that's a better question.
Yeah, indeed. All kinds of exciting... I'm not even going to try to say that.
No?
Mostly absorbing the holidays, watching the politics, watching the news cycle wind down. It's definitely getting boring out there. They're getting... slow for news, and you know, pretty soon people will start talking about seeing Santa, and NORAD will track him and all of that.
Yeah, and then somebody will shoot him down, and all that will happen. But, you know, you're talking about the politics, and we were watching debates. There was last week at this time, I think there was the Republican debate on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
And on Saturday, there was a Democratic debate.
We've kept up.
And it's funny, too, because the way they advertise them, this is the last debate before of 2015. And, like, you know, 2015 is over in 10 days. That's really not that much of a statement. There's going to be another debate next month, probably. So, yeah, I like the fact that there are all these, and I hesitate to even call them debates, because a debate is when you argue with somebody. Kyle, I don't agree with what you say, and I'm going to get in your face and argue with you, and you're going to interrupt me, and we're going to go back and forth like that. And there's not going to be some stupid moderator saying, the bell is ringing, you only have 15 seconds to say this, you agreed to the rules, you know, all that. That's not a debate. That's like playtime in the nursery school. No, let people manage their own time. Let's see how that works. You put people in a group together, it'd be like 12 angry men and Carly Fiorina, you know, and see what happens. See how Donald Trump abuses his stature and intimidates people and things like that. Then you learn. Then you learn what people are really all about.
Yeah, we only see these glints, these glimmers of their true knowledge, and then the thrust of what their platform might be. Mm-hmm. You just get they dip into it just a little bit, but no sooner are they there than the moderators are pushing them away, or there's an interruption and somebody wants to attack somebody in this way or that, and then it just turns into some other record or social observation that's like sort of meta to the actual platforms that they come up with. Mm-hmm. So we really don't get into an actual debate. We call it that, but I can't think of the right analogy. I don't know, going bird watching. You know, sometimes you won't see a bird, but you're hopeful, right? So bird, you still call it birding, right? But you might not see it. Well, no, you're going
to
see. That's
it's
terrible.
It's similar to whale watching, because sometimes you go out there and you hope to see a whale, but you don't.
Yeah, or looking for shooting stars.
Shooting
no,
stars?
Nah,
because sometimes you don't see those either.
That just insults stars, though.
Well, they're not really stars. You know that, right? They're little stones in the sky.
That's true. Meteorites.
They're meteorites when they land. They're meteors when they don't.
Right.
I think that's how it works.
Anyway, the point is,
yeah,
it's barely a debate at all.
It's not.
And
it's not
we all know it.
Yeah, and we shouldn't be following the same rule every time. It should be, if you're going to experiment with these formats, have different formats at least, not the same one. Where you tell somebody they have 15 seconds to answer an important question. That's, you know, that's a game show. That's not what the president of the United States is going to be expected to do. And what I would like to see, like I said before, is you just let everybody loose onto the floor and see how they govern a group of people. Who takes charge? Who is polite and mature? Who loses his cool or her cool? You know, it's that simple. That's what governing is going to be all about. So let's see how they actually do it. I got to say, though, watching the Republicans and then watching the Democrats, it was night and day. I don't know if people saw both of them, but just the debate on Saturday, it was very refreshing. And I say this disagreeing with so many things that people there say, but compared to what I saw last Tuesday with the Republicans, wow. It's like the grown-up table.
The attitudes, the positions, and also what they actually got into, more than like that superficial kind of meta political campaign jabbing, it was much more pithy, much more interesting. It wasn't as shallow.
Right.
It certainly was a lot closer to the debate, perhaps not an academic debate per se, or by the book, so to speak, but it looked a lot more like one, and was, as you said, refreshing to hear.
Seeing Bernie Sanders just apologize right off the bat for that database thing, whatever that was all about.
Yeah, it was warmth.
It was mature. It was what you expect for, you know, people that are grown-ups to do, and move on to the important issues rather than whatever they talk about when all these Republicans get together.
Yeah.
So there was that, and we look forward to more of it. Although, we won't be hearing from Lindsey Graham anymore. He's out. He's done.
You're right, yeah.
The Miss Universe thing was too much for him.
He didn't win.
No. And he's very upset with the way that was. You know, that's, I wasn't watching it. Wasn't even aware that was going on. And there are people who are saying that whole Miss Universe screw up was a publicity stunt to get more attention, which I don't believe, and I don't think anybody who thinks it through would believe, because it's just so painful to watch. We're talking about Steve Harvey accidentally crowning the wrong Miss Universe, crowning Miss Columbia instead of Miss Philippines.
Philippines, yeah.
Having to take the crown off the head of Miss Columbia and put it onto the right head. Wow, that was it was painful. Well, the whole pageant is painful, of course. Again, I didn't know it was even going on. But for these people, it was a moment. Although I don't feel sorry for any of them, because Miss Columbia has gotten more attention than she would have gotten if she did win. All right, she will be remembered, and she'll probably get all kinds of publicity and product endorsement deals and things like that. And of course, Miss Philippines is going to do well as well. And as far as Steve Harvey, he's gonna survive. We've all had disasters. We've had disasters in this very room. You know, all kinds of things that don't go right. You want them to go right, and you make a mistake, or some bit of equipment fails, and you just feel like a big idiot. And we saw that happen to a star. Now, the advantage of that, like I said, the star will survive. He will get through this. But for all the people out there who face disasters in their lives, they can look at that moment and say, wow, whatever I'm going through right now, it wasn't as disastrous as that. So I'll get through my little disaster. So I think Steve Harvey can take some comfort in that he's probably helped a lot of people by having a monumental on-air live screw-up like that. And it's history as well.
Yeah, I feel for him. I wouldn't wish that upon anyone. It's a very awkward situation.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, what else is going on?
Well, there is that. Okay, let's go through the wire here. Well, there's been some space developments.
You're right.
Very happy about this, because
I don't want to talk about this because I can't watch any of this. And actually, there were a couple people that remarked about this. I don't know if you have an article about it, but I had found there's some consternation about the airing of some of these launches because NASA's not even showing SpaceX. You have to go to SpaceX.
You're saying on NASA TV they don't show SpaceX launches?
There was some complaints being kind of thrown around in some of the articles I was reading that sounded a bit like NASA was making it hard to find. Like, there was maybe 5 minutes of coverage on maybe one or two stations. Nobody really showed it live.
Interesting.
And you can't get NASA TV really anywhere around here on a cable provider.
No, you can't.
And satellite, it's pretty sparse as well. And they have HD now. I mean, it's like, it's crazy.
That's not true, because you can get it on DirecTV and Dish Network, which is what the Americans use for satellite.
You could probably get it on free-to-air as well.
Yeah, we can't get it on our Canadian dish, because it doesn't meet the requirements of Canadian content, so they won't carry it there.
Point is, SpaceX doesn't use the same TV station or channel or anything as NASA or any other government that would ordinarily or traditionally be in this position, and they just aired it on the web. They offered a stream, and people were watching this whole thing go down. We've seen a couple of them before, and this mission was not a test.
Wait, which mission are we talking about? There's so many missions. Which one is this? This is the SpaceX thing?
The Falcon 9 that landed on its own, yeah.
So it went up and it came back down.
It sure did.
All right. I mean, that's just one of a bunch of things that have been happening.
There's a lot that's going on, yeah.
And that's what thrills me, is the fact that we're talking about space, we're seeing pictures coming back from distant worlds, and we even saw a picture of our own world taken from a craft that's orbiting the moon, which I didn't even know we had spacecraft orbiting the moon. But we have a nice picture of Earth that just was released yesterday, I believe.
Was that from the Laddie?
I don't know.
We might have actually seen
the craft that took off.
Wasn't that to study gravity on the moon?
It definitely was for something around the moon. I don't know.
There's
if that's
so many,
the same.
It's hard to keep track.
Yeah, and that's good. That's good, because this is exploration. This is science. This is advancement of the human race. And I have a real problem with anybody that argues against the space program, because that is what gives me hope, seeing all this. And the privatization of space is something I've long been looking forward to, because that way you move beyond all the government restrictions and budget cuts and congressmen who don't understand what they're talking about, who have power over this. Instead, you go to visionaries who have lots of money that can do cool things, and you don't disconnect from government programs. You help them as well, but they're not the only thing out there. And as a result, you have things like SpaceX. I just want to read a little bit of this story from the Washington Post about the launch yesterday. Monday night, Elon Musk jumped out of his space company's launch control center to watch this one live. He could do that. He was there. The last time SpaceX launched a rocket, it blew up in a fireball. Now, this one had to go right, but he always wanted to see if the company would be able to land the first stage of the rocket, a momentous first. He was relieved that the launch went off flawlessly. That was the main goal. Then he saw the rocket reappear in the darkness over the Florida Space Coast. They capitalized that, Florida Space Coast. That's cool. Tilting toward a landing pad at Cape Canaveral, it seemed to be right on the mark, but then there was a massive boom, and he thought the worst. It had exploded. Well, at least we got close, he said to himself. But then he went inside, and people were agog. The sound was a sonic boom, the shockwave of a rocket traveling through the air faster than the speed of sound. There is this amazing video of the rocket standing there, he recounted in a call with reporters yesterday evening. And it was still standing there this morning. It's amazing he didn't know about the sonic boom, that he just assumed it blew up. But this is amazing. What's important about this is because the amount of money that they save by being able to recover and reuse the first stage of rockets, you know, that's the most expensive part. They have the engines, after all. That will dramatically lower the cost of space travel, and that's a key step in making space more accessible, and that's what's going to happen now. This worked, and it's going to get better. It's going to get more common. And we're talking SpaceX being used to bring astronauts to the space station, I believe, in 2017. That's going to happen. First time since the space shuttle.
Yeah, very soon. That's the caveat, is this landing technique for the first stage, the selection of modules and vehicles that are sort of vying to be on top of these kinds of rockets, are sort of the foundation for future human spaceflight because of the shuttle's retirement.
Right.
So they had to come up with other vehicles, and in partnership with these private companies, they've developed this kind of launch capability, and of course the versatility. They're actually adding a new piece of docking equipment coming up to accept some of the new private space cargo vehicles. So as of now, they're doing cargo runs, and in those next couple years, they're going to transition to getting them certified and okayed for human spaceflight.
Yeah, and it's interesting. This story says that Elon Musk talks about a city on Mars as a result of this particular test. The landing shows the technology exists to reuse powerful rockets. I think it really quite dramatically improves my confidence that a city on Mars is possible, he said. That's what this is all about. And wow. Can you imagine that? I mean, we have to do things like that. We have to go to other places. We have to establish colonies and experiment with other worlds. Otherwise, what's the point? And, you know, we look at these things in the sky. We've been looking at them since we were cavemen. They're there for a reason. They're there for us to move towards at some point. And I was telling you this the other day, you know, looking at distant stars, we have to figure that out too at some point. We have to figure out how to exceed the speed of light, how to get to those places that seem so far away. Otherwise, it's just the universe mocking us. It's staring us in the face and showing us all these worlds that we can never get to. And I don't believe that's true. I think it'll take us a long time to figure it out. But there are so many different levels of space. Right now, we're in the first levels of it, going to the moon, going to Mars. Then there's the rest of the solar system. Then there are nearby stars. Then there are nearby solar systems. Then there are nearby galaxies. It just will keep going. And that's the future. That's the real future.
Right. Yeah, you have to dream big, but you also have to be incremental, I think. You have to keep your feet a bit grounded and be incremental. And these are the incremental kinds of moves that will facilitate really reliable transportation methods and further innovation in the area. I mean, this changes a lot of the playing field. I mean, just this alone, being able to shuttle people as an alternative to the basin, I think, Baikonur, is it in Kazakhstan? I can't remember the name of the cosmodome there, but that is the main place where humans are sent to ISS at the current stage of development. Mm-hmm. What this would do is allow American launches for resupplying or exchanging crew members, really, which has all been taking place in Russia. So, but that adds diversity. It's not even, I mean, it's kind of simplistic to think of it as a nation versus nation thing, like, oh, we need a posture against Russia. It's not really that. No. It's that both our countries have been involved since the very, very burgeoning of this technology. And what now is happening is a sort of a global diversification of that in the private realm.
That helped at the beginning when it was the U.S. versus Russia, the race into space. That sort of helped push it along. But I think we're beyond that now. And now that private enterprise has gotten involved, it's basically just a science thing that we all share and we all benefit from.
And it's sort of beautiful to see different nations actually lend their expertise. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're seeing. You see like the different pieces and parts, different nations representing the different labs or different modules or tools and stuff.
So I find a parallel what a lot of people want with social programs. You know, if you elect somebody like Obama, they get discouraged quickly because we don't reach all the goals that we want to reach. We don't solve health care. We don't end war. We don't do all these things that we want to do. And we wind up blaming the person who is actually a step in the right direction, but certainly not the entire voyage.
Yeah.
In the same way, people look at distant stars and say, well, that's so far away. We'll never get there. What's the point? Instead of looking at something that is attainable and seeing that as a step in the right direction. And just imagine where we were in the early 60s and where we are now. Think of satellite technology. Think of all the things we benefit from on a daily basis because of space exploration.
Especially material sciences.
Absolutely. And it's going to get better. It's going to get more and more interesting. We're going to learn more about all kinds of things involving our planet and involving others. We're finding worlds in around other stars that we believe could be habitable. Now, the question is, how would we ever get there? I don't know. That's not something that we're ready for now. But if we know where these worlds are, we can start listening in those areas to see if there is any kind of transmission of an intelligent race. And that, imagine how that will change this planet, our history, to know that there's something else out there. I mean, we all kind of know there is something else out there, but we don't know where it is or how to contact it or how to listen to it. But we're getting closer, and that day is going to come, and that's going to be something. That is going to be something. I hope to see it. I hope to see that day one time.
Well, kudos and congrats to everyone who's working hard at work at that that development and incredible science. And we'll catch up with this again, I'm sure.
And you know, kids out there are experimenting with all kinds of rockets and drones, even. You know.
Oh yes.
And that brings up an interesting point because we're kind of involved in this a little bit, but there is this whole drone registry thing going on.
Just started December 21st.
That was yesterday. Really? Just started yesterday?
Yeah, I think.
Okay. So now how is that supposed to work exactly? I find a parallel to this and gun control. So, okay, if drones can be registered successfully and controlled successfully, then there's hope for doing the same to guns. I just don't see how it's possible right now because there are so many drones out there already. How are you going to keep track of them? Can you move a drone from one place to another? Who's going to pull over a drone that's up in the sky? You know, things like that. These are my questions. And I'm very curious how they're handled.
Yeah, and I think that's actually why they've set it up, because they want to answer those questions for themselves through doing this sort of trial registration. And I think the short answer is how they're going to do it is the way they do everything else, by weight.
By weight?
By weight. Think about everything. Weights and measures. Every standard, everything out there is controlled by weight. And so in light of that technical detail, it's actually a weight range that they're trying to regulate. And so the just as a little overview, their criteria says, I think, everything from a half pound to 55 pounds must be registered.
Okay. All right. And a typical drone you can buy today is about, 14 ounces? That's more than half a pound.
If it's got a camera or some kind of cover, some extra stuff, or it's supposed to carry stuff, you're going to be right in that range. It's interesting because 14 ounces for kind of a mid-range drone isn't uncommon, and 16 is a pound, so half that, 8 ounces, anything above about 9 or 10 ounces would theoretically be registered. I don't know if that's right, if I read that, but it seems like even the very small drones will have to be registered.
I have a lot of predictions about drones. I'm looking forward to it because it's going to be fun when Amazon starts delivering things by drone. I predict there will be things called pirate drones. And what a pirate drone is, it's something that a group of people, probably called hackers because they're blamed for everything, will launch another drone to intercept the drone that's delivering something to somebody somewhere, and basically take control of it and hijack it, or take the goods that are contained within it, or just take the drone itself. And you're going to have all kinds of chaos in the skies. I know that's going to happen at some point. Someone's going to figure that out.
Well, you'll be happy to know.
Yeah. Has it happened already?
No, I think it should be swarms. I think there will be swarms of drones, drones that that take over other drones, hijack, in other words, drones, and then who knows? I mean, the sky's the limit. Ha ha.
Oh, that's funny. That's good. Yeah. I like that.
But
that's rich.
The FAA wants you to know that registration of your drone will only be $5.
What? We got to pay for the registration on top of everything else?
And it's simple. It's web-based. And it's free for the first 30 days. I don't know what that means.
Do you have to renew your registration? Is that what you're trying to tell me? That this is going to be a yearly fee or something?
Registration is free for the first 30 days.
You tell the FAA.
Or they bill you?
When they pry a drone out of my dead hands... But that's when they can charge me. That doesn't make sense.
So the criteria is 0.55, that's 250 grams, and less than 55 pounds. That's
Do you see what just happened there? Say those numbers again. Go ahead. Say those numbers
0.55
again.
0.55 and 55.
0.55 what? 0.55 pounds?
Pounds.
And how many grams?
250.
Which number seems like a more normal number to you? 0.55 or 250?
0.55.
Really? That seems like a normal number to you? I think 250 is a much more solid number. It's a quarter of a thousand. 250. When's the last time you had 0.55 or something? You know? They're going metric. Don't you see? They're trying to inject a metric system upon us. Our own FAA. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. We use the imperial system, so get over it.
Yeah, we're imperialists. So
this is the Imperial States of America. Get used to it.
Yeah. Run with that. That's good.
Hippie centigrade people.
Well, that's what they're doing. I'm trying to warn you. 250 grams.
Yeah, I know grams. I know grams, but I don't talk about grams on the radio,
okay? Well, you just did. You brought it up.
Yeah.
All right. All right, so you're saying we'll have to pay to register our drones.
Yep, you have to be 13 or older, U.S. citizen or permanent resident, and you got to pay $5. You must register by paper. You can't use their web thing if it is used for commercial purposes, if it is used for other than hobby or recreation. If it is greater than 55 pounds, you also have to do the actual aircraft process for that. And you And this is interesting to me because we travel a lot.
Mm-hmm.
If you intend to operate your aircraft outside the U.S.,
oh,
So could we register an international drone? I mean, I'd like to know about some of the U.S.'s drones that are registered internationally.
If we take a drone and we just fly it over the border to Canada, what's going to happen to it? You know, the U.S. can't do anything about it once it's in Canadian airspace.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, it's like if it's implicated or if it's seen overseas, and the U.S. what, retroactively needs to look up what drone crashed into some stupid thing in London or wherever.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I don't know. It's like, is that a Homeland Security thing, or is that just is that helping me, or am I helping them as investigators with everything at their fingertips? I don't really understand. I mean, who is that for?
Yeah.
I like to travel internationally. I might want to take my drone internationally. Why then do I have to file by paper and register at all? I'm not in the U.S. That's not the FAA's jurisdiction. What gives?
Yeah.
So there's some curious stuff going on.
I'm also curious, how high does a drone have to be off the ground for the FAA to even be interested in it? Like, if I have my drone just go, say, 2 feet off the ground, then I don't see why that's a concern of the FAA. And maybe I want to do that.
I think it is less than 500 feet, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, we have interesting times ahead. And, of course, it's going to get complicated with all this bureaucracy being injected. And I'm also, you just called up a page now. No drone zone? What's that all about?
Well, the FAA also, they have a lot of stuff. It's a really great website, FAA.gov, UAS. This section is called No Drone Zone. And they actually are providing graphics. They're providing graphics, so, you know, like the old no smoking signs, the red circle with the X? Well, they have ones of those for drones. So, and they have some with a label, a little bit of text. It's all there for you, and it basically, you can post this, I'm sorry, you can post it, and it's threatening, and people will listen.
No,
because
I see
it. Says,
I see the little red circle with the slash and a picture of a drone, but my question is, who is that for? I mean, is a drone supposed to see that from the sky, or how? Who I mean, is it where you launch a drone from? You know, not to launch a drone. Drones travel; they go from one place to another. So you may start in a drone zone, but then wind up in a no drone zone. But you don't know that because you're not on the ground. It's really kind of confusing, and I think a little silly.
Yeah, it is. It's getting crazy. So we're following this. There's all kinds of interesting things going on as far as how and who wants to know where your drone is and what your drone is being used for.
I'm worried about one thing, though. I'm worried about drones just being everywhere where you can't not hear them. It's just a constant drone of drones, if you know what I mean. And also, you can't see the sky anymore because they're just all over the place. I hope that doesn't happen. Right now, it just seems like a fun toy. But who knows? As they improve the technology, all kinds of interesting possibilities exist. So I guess they're trying to get a handle on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to have to carefully use our unmanned aerial vehicles. And I encourage everyone listening, please be careful with your drone.
Some other technology news, which
yes.
is, I think, good. Long Island's solar industry got a boost from LIPA last Wednesday. Expects another one from Washington, D.C. as the utility lifted a local cap on specially metered solar installations, and Congress is prepared to extend the key solar federal tax credit. Basically, there was a limit on net metered energy that was purchased from homes, businesses, municipalities, and schools. The cap was 3% of the energy produced by net metered green power installations. And LIPA and PSEG Long Island were approaching that cap. Now, the board previously discussed doubling that cap to 6% in line with the rest of the state. But the Public Service Commission, noting that another state utility was nearing the 6% cap, decided to lift the limit entirely until deliberations on the compensation mechanism for net metering end sometime next year. Customers with net meters can bank excess energy when they produce more power from their solar or wind systems than their homes or businesses can use. This all sounds great. It sounds like people are finally not being penalized for going green and for using these types of technologies. We saw the solar farm out east in Shoreham. It looks like it's complete.
Yeah, they have all the panels in.
That's great.
I think it's really exciting because the utilities are being supportive. Mm-hmm. So what you end up with is you just basically have to design what you need and go shopping or right. get help because it's right there. I mean, the utility sounds like they're receptive if you want to send some excess power back into the system. They're creating infrastructure and tiers of service to support that wholeheartedly, you know, not in a resistant way. They're not being forced to, but actually pushing forward on it, pushing ahead, so to speak. So that's thrilling. And with the cost of panels being so low, it really is about getting excited and people creating little projects where they can switch to this. So very cool to see. And definitely the large farms in unused space mm-hmm. and just having that to diversify the options available here on the island, I think, is incredible.
And getting past the idiots who complain about it for some reason. We talked about this last week in Kings Park. There is no radiation that comes from these things. This is a positive development. It cuts down on energy costs. It cuts down on pollution. And many times it replaces something that was far worse that it occupied that land beforehand. They're talking about putting it on a toxic waste dump in Kings Park, and people were complaining that, well, it's not going to be pretty. It's going to cause radiation or something like that. And they said nothing when the toxic chemicals were being dumped left and right. So, yeah, we have to get past all that and not even take it seriously when the arguments get so silly. Related to that, and I think we should try to take phone calls in just a little bit, but I don't know if you heard about what happened in Virginia when some teacher gave a homework assignment. This is a place called Staunton, Virginia. Gave a homework assignment asking students to try their hand at calligraphy by copying a statement in Arabic. Under the heading Practicing Calligraphy, the worksheet said, here is the Shahada, the Islamic statement of, I think I left out an H there, Shahada. I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
Shahada.
Yeah, the Islamic statement of faith written in Arabic. In the space below, try copying it by hand. This should give you an idea of the artistic complexity of calligraphy. And the statement translated to, there is no God but Allah. Muhammad is the messenger of Allah. And that set people off that their kids, I don't know how they found out that's what it meant, but their kids were writing this. That meant their kids were being indoctrinated and brainwashed. And the school district was barraged with angry emails and phone calls, and the entire school district had to close last week because they were worried about the safety of teachers and students. This is the mentality that we're dealing with. Now, that wasn't considered a terrorist act, that people were being threatened with violence or whatever, because someone dared to write something in Arabic. This was a simple homework assignment that people were given, and you see the ignorance that's around us in so many different ways, and it's funny, but it's also sad. Today, though, there was another story. You might have heard about this. This happened in Kenya, where a bus was stormed by one of those many terrorist groups that they have. I think Al-Shabaab was this one. Muslim passengers were told to separate themselves from Christian passengers, and they refused. They refused to basically show the terrorists who the Christians were so they could be executed. The bus was traveling from Nairobi to Mandera on Monday when the attack occurred in the village of El Wak on the Somali border. Gunmen ordered everyone off the bus, but the passengers told them they wanted to be killed together or left alone. That is the true face of Islam right there, I think. Or the true face of just decent people of any religion. And that's what people need to understand. It's not something to be afraid of. It's something to try and understand and learn from and teach what you believe in.
Definitely, yeah. It's like the human way to be to look at it. It sort of is the where we're at. I think as a society, we should stick together. We should face it together. And gosh, I mean, what a story. That's harrowing.
I think so.
We need to hear more of that.
It's just crazy to see all this hatred out there, all this fear that it exists everywhere, not just in Virginia,
yeah,
but throughout the country. The fear of refugees who are trying to escape the horror, and then you see something like what happens in Canada, where 10,000 of them are just welcomed at an airport by people, by the prime minister.
Yeah.
Feel so embarrassed that we're bickering over it in this country when we should take more responsibility for what's happening in that region than any other country in the world, because we helped destabilize it. In fact, we led the destabilization, and now we don't even want to take responsibility for that. It's really sickening. Do you want to take phone calls? Do
we have? I think we can do that.
We haven't gotten into delay in a while, so we might be a little bit rusty.
Hold on. Give me like 5 seconds here.
All right, 5 seconds, folks. Give Kyle 5 seconds. Do you want me to be quiet, or should I just? I'll banter a little bit. Yes. Yeah, you're doing everything right so far. You just have to switch that into the other channel, and then everything should be fine.
Okay.
And you have to remember that channel 8 has to be up.
That
one that I'm pointing to right there. Yes.
Is
up. Is it up?
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
I'm sorry.
WUUSB 90.1 FM in Stony Brook.
And we're in delay. As soon as our mics... Oh, man, I can hear myself.
I can hear myself, too.
The whole show, I sounded like static. Now it's cutting in and
out.
Can
our listeners hear? Wait, how's the phone ringing? We didn't even get the phone number yet.
Yeah, 631-632-6901. WUSB Stony Brook. This is Off the Wall with Kyle and Emmanuel. No, it's actually Off the Wall with Emmanuel, and I am Kyle. But, yeah.
No, I'm giving you a slow clap because that was really good getting into delay. I'm pleased.
Now, I think you're on delay with the applause because I did such a good job.
You did.
That we're going to take this call right here. Hi, you're on WUSB, Off the Wall.
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing?
Oh, we're pretty well. What's on your mind?
I wanted to complain. I wish you guys would stop droning on.
Oh, wow.
You brought jokes.
Yeah, you guys didn't see that one coming, right?
No.
But cool. Well, we'll do our best not to be drones in the future.
Do you have anything else to offer to us?
I'm going to buy one. I'm sorry?
Do you have anything else to offer?
Yeah, I do, as a matter of fact. Speaking of which, Santa's going to get me one for Christmas, and I'm not going to register it.
Uh-oh.
Don't.
That's silly. I'm just not going to do it. I'm responsible. I don't think there's any need for it. I don't fly in front of airplanes. I don't fly in front of malls or anything like that.
Yeah, but, you know, that's what I'm curious about. What happens to people like you who don't register? How do they even find you in the first place? You know, do they
good question.
I mean, if you buy one, it seems that you would register at the time you buy it, and then they would track you from there, I would imagine.
Look, I think if the FAA wanted some drones, they could probably rustle up some drones. Now, if they wanted to turn those drones into drone police, I don't think that there would be much there to stop them. So what's stopping them from creating a drone army that we can co-opt, fight against?
A drone army? Really? This is happening?
Well, I don't know, but couldn't they create autonomous sort of sensors that are a part of that as like an aerial traffic cop kind of thing? I mean, isn't that the grand goal anyway with light aircraft and personal aircraft? They're trying to add more levels and options in airspace, that kind of thing. Have you ever heard of that?
It could very well be. I feel
like it's going to tie in, like they're trying to create a grander system of automation and controlling airspace and so on.
Let's take some more phone calls. Thank you for this, though.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Alrighty, then. Not a problem.
Have a good one. Hi, you're on WUSB. No, you're not, because it's 631-632-6901. Don't get discouraged.
Did we not give out the phone number? I'm sorry if we didn't give out the phone number. 631-632-6901. That's our telephone number. We're in the United States, country code 1 if you're outside the United States.
Yes.
And if you have anything to say about technology, drones, space travel, refugees, Islam, anything.
Hello, you're on Off the Wall.
Hi, how you doing? I just wanted to talk about SpaceX.
Yeah.
Privatization of spacefaring.
Yeah, what do you think about it?
Please turn down your radio.
Yeah, turn your radio down.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I don't think SpaceX and the privatization of spacefaring is good for humanity, because it's yet another example of the privatization of a public service. This does not democratize the industry or lead to increased sharing, since it's one for profit, not as a nonprofit like a government agency. And sure, a government agency like NASA is not likely to share its information with other countries, but it is run in the public interest rather than motivations around profit and patents. Further, private industries typically charge a premium for sharing their discoveries with the public sector, such as consultants or patent fees. Neil Armstrong has spoken out against Elon Musk, SpaceX, and privatization, as has Neil deGrasse Tyson. So I was just wondering what...
Well, you know, I agree with most of what you say, and I would say that that's something to be very aware of. But unfortunately, NASA's not doing enough. And I don't know about you, but I'm impatient. I want there to be more exploration and more science. And if private industry is a way to get there, then let's support it for now, and then figure out what to do after we go to these places and make the discoveries and advance the technology.
Yeah, there's endless critiques of privatization, but there really isn't much of an alternative in this scenario to get as far as we want to get quickly.
Yeah, NASA can't even get to the space station anymore. And that's ridiculous. The space station itself, we were talking about this, it's due to be decommissioned. And you know, what kind of nonsense is that? We spent all this time and money building the thing, and it's going to be decommissioned. We need permanent structures. We need cities in space. We need space stations. We need ways of launching spacecraft from space instead of the expensive way of doing it from here. And if the governments aren't able to do that, and so far it seems like they're only able to do a small amount, then private industry, I think, is the answer.
What kinds of things further humanity, in your opinion?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
What kinds of things further humanity, in your opinion?
Oh, I'm all on board with this. I think this does further humanity, no doubt about it. But my concern is, as you said earlier in your broadcast, that this isn't reaching people. It's not being aired, and I monitored this all day on the internet, and the only outlooks that I saw talking about it were the typical kind of space nerd outlets that are steeped in this sort of stuff. So I'm just thinking, I didn't grow up in the time, but you know, I've seen the archival footage of the absolute throngs and crowds of people. It was on the cover of newspapers, everything, you know, all that NASA did. So I think that paired with the privatization of it is the general lack of interest. And I am skeptical that this is serving much other than, you know, funneling money into Elon Musk's pocket.
Yeah, so, he is a billionaire. I mean, he started PayPal, right? That's how he got rich. How nice or good of a person could he possibly be?
He already has money then. He doesn't need to get more. Maybe he's giving something back. I don't want to sound too naive here, but, you know, I trust billionaires about as much as I trust governments.
It's that you definitely have a point insofar as the amount of apathy we see or lack of coverage paired with, like, this blind rush towards privatization, it's like any other private or quote, open or free market industry, you're going to want to have some oversight, and I think that's definitely important going forward. Thanks a lot for your call.
Yes, thanks.
Thank you.
All right, 631-632-6901. We got a couple minutes left.
Well, actually, I wanted to tell you, I have a listener letter I'd like to read. And it ties into our outro.
Please.
That's the point. It can't be that quick.
Let's do this.
So I think we have to exit delay because we have to go into the outro. Do we have more calls? Not right now. No, we don't, right?
No.
Okay, so let's gracefully get out of delay. I'll read you this, and then we'll go into the outro. Yeah.
Okay, so...
You need to switch your headphones. That's what you need to do. And here we are, out of delay. And
yeah.
Nobody knew anything happened.
I feel quite out of delay.
Okay, this listener writes into us, and you can write into us too, folks. Everybody has this power. OTW@2600.com. Well, everybody who has access to email.
OTW@2600.com.
I found it amusing you used the Muslim call to prayer as the sign-off song at the end of one of your shows. I wonder how many complaints you got from that. Surprisingly few,
There's
actually.
Nothing funny about that.
No. If you use the Lord's Prayer or a Hindu chant, I bet you would have had a different response. Well, actually, you know, I think our listeners are ready for this kind of thing.
A different response? Is that like build up?
The reason I'm writing is to tell you a strange but true story. Many, many years ago, like around 2000, I downloaded music legally for free from an outfit called Nude, N-O-O-D, who were doing experimental music. It's very, very hard to find their stuff nowadays, but I still listen to it often. And our listener has actually given us a copy of this, which is going to be our outro. But the song includes a version of the call to prayer. The whole point is it's all put together to make it fun. And I believe that some of the members of Nude were Muslim, too. It's not so remarkable, but I learned years ago that all the, and I don't know how to pronounce this word, Mezin, M-U-E-Z-Z-I-N, those are the guys that do the call to prayer. They all have their own song, and each one is unique. Did you know that? I did not know that.
Wow. It's like Orthodox bell ringing.
I suppose. Everyone has like their own style
of
doing
it. The monks, yeah.
I became so familiar with this one from listening to the song that it was ingrained in my head. So fast forward to 2015. My wife and I had a holiday in Istanbul, and our hotel was near an unremarkable mosque just inside the walls of the old city. Now, Istanbul is full of mosques, and the call to prayer comes from all directions. Imagine my absolute surprise when the call to prayer from the closest mosque that was made on the first morning we were there was absolutely 100% the same as that in the song I had been listening to since the year 2000. I wonder what the chances are of that. And that's something that I'd like to know more about, too. Thank you, Neil, for that letter. And Neil also hopes that you took the razor blade out of the board so that...
Yes.
We dropped down to one channel, I think, when you did that a few weeks ago. That's what we have holding the board together here. But yeah, we're going to go out with that with that song. It's not all a call to prayer, but the call to prayer is in there.
Okay. For Off the Wall, this is Kyle.
And this is Emmanuel.
Good night.
I'm covering for Finn. This is Last Call with Chris Michaels. And we are going to embark on a cerebral suppository on politics, entertainment, and God knows what else comes out of my disease-ridden mind.